Welcome to Love's Tender Flame, Tales of Romance. I'm Mardell, reading The Option Block by Rex Beach. Chapter 22. Under Lorelai's encouragement, Bob put in the next 2 weeks to good advantage. In fact, so obsessed was he with his new employment that it was not long before his imaginary bet with Katie assumed reality in his mind. Moreover, it became gossip around his clubs and in quarters where he was well known. His method of winning the wager was deemed not only characteristic but ingenious. His exploits were famous, and his friends rejoicing in one more display of eccentricity and relishing any mild misfortune to Dick Cady, in the majority of cases, changed tailors. Business at Kurtz's increased so substantially that Bob was treated with a reverential amazement by everyone in the shop. The other salesmen gazed upon him with envy. Kurtz's bearing changed in a way that was extremely gratifying to one who had been universally accounted a failure. And Bob expanded under success. He began to feel more than mere amusement in his experiment. His marriage in some way had become public, but although it occasioned some comment, the affair was too old to be of much news value, and therefore it did not get into the papers except as an announcement. Now that he had escaped the disagreeable notoriety he had expected and was possessed of larger means, Bob, inordinately proud of his wife's beauty and boyishly eager to display it, undertook to win social recognition for her. It was no difficult task for one with his wide acquaintance to make a beginning. Lorelai was surprised and delighted one day to receive an invitation for her and her husband to spend a weekend at Fennel Court, the country home of Bert Hayman's sister. She had not been sorry to give up her theatrical work and the prospect of meeting nice people, of leaving for good and all the sordid, unhealthy atmosphere of Broadway, bathed her in a glow of anticipation. She had considerable knowledge of rich men, in their hours of recreation at least, but of their women she knew little, and nothing whatever of the life which went on in exclusive circles. During the fortnight of preparation before the visit, her feelings more nearly approached stage fright than upon the occasion of her first public appearance. Fennel Court is one of the show places of the Wheatley Hills section. The house itself is a pretentious structure of brick and terracotta crowning a hill. A formal and sunken garden, the latter with a pergola and a temple of Venus, grassy terraces, rows and clumps of ornamental trees and dwarf shrubs, dazzling patches of flowers and empty green lawns, evidence the skill of a highly paid landscape artist, while stables, greenhouses, a natatorium, tennis and squash courts in the background testify to the expensive habits of the owners. The gardens are a feature of the estate. A fortune is represented in the stone pools, the massive urns, the statuary, and the potted plants. Spotless, brilliant-hued tiled walks lead between riotous beds ablaze with every color, and the main driveway swings to the crest of a ridge that overlooks this charming prospect. Bert Hayman drove the Whartons out from the city, and Lorelai's first glimpse of Fennel Court was such that she forgot her vague dislike of Hayman himself. Bert, who had met her and Bob for luncheon, had turned out to be, instead of a polished man of the world, a glib youth with an artificial laugh and a pair of sober, heavy-lidded eyes. Lorelai's shyness at meeting him had quickly disappeared when she found that he knew more theatrical people than she, and that he was quite unable to talk interestingly about anything except choruses and choruses. Of the former, he was a merciless critic. Of the latter, he was an enthusiastic supporter, that he possessed a keen appreciation of feminine beauty. He showed by surrendering unconditionally to Lorelei's charms. She might have been flattered, had he not pressed his attentions over boldly. As it was, seeing that Bob was pleased at the tribute to his wife's loveliness, rather than offended at his friend's effrontery, she did her best to smother her resentment. As Haman's car rolled up the driveway, and the beauties of Fennel Court displayed themselves, Lorelei found her heart throbbing violently. Was this the beginning of a glorious adventure? Was not life unfolding at last? Was she not upon the threshold of a new world? The flutter in her breast was answer. Bert led the way through an impressive hall that bisected the building, then out upon a stately balustraded stone terrace, where in the grateful shade of gaudy awnings a dozen people were chatting at tea tables. Mrs. Fennel, the hostess, a plain-faced, dumpy young matron, welcomed the newcomers, then made Lorelei known. As for Bob, he needed no introductions. A noisy outburst greeted him, and Lorelei's heart warmed at the welcome. There were a few embarrassing moments when she felt critical eyes measuring her, but her first instinctive appraisal of the other women made her easy. It needed no more than a modest estimate of her own attractions to tell her that she was the smartest person in this smart assembly. The swift, startled admiration of the men proved it beyond question. A few moments of chatter, then she and Bob were led into the house and up into a cool, wide bedroom. As Lorelei removed her motor coat and bonnet, she exclaimed breathlessly, "What a gorgeous house! And those people, they weren't the least formal." Bob laughed. "Formality is about the last thing they're famous for. There's liable to be too much informality. Say, you made those dames look like the Monday morning wash ladies' parade. I knew you would."
"You said this was the younger set. But that awful Thompson Belair widow is here. And that blonde girl I met her with."
"Alice Wyeth?"
"Yes, I thought she was going to kiss you."
Bob grinned. "So did I. She will, too, if she feels like it."
"Oh, won't you have anything to say about it?"
"What could I say? Alice does just as she likes. So does everybody else, for that matter. I've never gone in for this sort of thing very much."
After a moment, Lorelei ventured, "I suppose they're all hard drinkers."
"That wasn't spring water you saw in their glasses."
"Are you going to..." Lorelei eyed him anxiously.
"I can't very well make myself conspicuous by refusing everything. I don't want to look like a zebra in a henyard. And a cocktail before dinner wouldn't hurt anybody."
Noting his wife's expression, he kissed her lightly.
"Now don't spoil your first party by worrying over me. Just forget you're married. Have a good time."
Music greeted them as they descended the stairs, and they found some of the guests dancing to the strains of a giant orchestra built into the music room. Haman promptly seized upon Lorelei and whirled her away, but not before she saw the Wyeth blonde making for Bob, as an eagle makes for its prey. Society was tango mad. The guests could not wait for evening, but indulged their latest fancy in the open air and in the daylight. Doubtless the naiads used to dance in daylight when they made merry, but modern terpsichorean figures are suitable only for the evening. The spectacle of a red-faced, harem-skirted matron wobbling through a one-step, her billowing amplitude restrained only by a boneless 6-inch corset, is even less classic than the antics of a dancing bear. Guests continued to arrive from time to time, some from Westchester and the Connecticut shore, others from neighboring estates. One couple in riding clothes out for a gallop dismounted and stayed for a trot. The huge tiled terrace began to resemble a Broadway tea dancing. There was more freedom, more vivacity than Lorelei was accustomed to, even in the gayest downtown resorts. The fun was swift and hilarious. There was a great deal of drinking. Bob, after a manful struggle against his desires and a frightened resistance to the advances of Miss Wyeth, had fled to the billiard room. The widow T.B., odorous of cocktails, plowed through the intricacies of the latest dances, wallowing like a bluff-bowed tramp steamer, full to the hatches with a cargo of rum and sugar. Bert Hayman, fatuously inflamed with Lorelei's beauty, waged a bitter contest with the other men for her favor. He appropriated her. He was affectionate. He ventured to become suggestive in a snickering, covert way. His intimate manner of dancing would not have been tolerated in any public place, and Lorelei was upon the point of objecting until she saw that the others, men and women alike, were exaggerating the movements and entwining their limbs even more pronouncedly. Arden Fennell, Lorelei's host, explained, "We don't dance in the cafes anymore. They're so strict, it's no fun." Fennell was a slight man of 30 or 50, colorless of face and predatory of nose. He had a shocking sense of humor, which he displayed by telling Lorelei a story that left her mute with indignation, until she saw that he was quite unconscious of any breach of etiquette. When he finally left her, she was sadly bewildered and found herself wondering if the occurrences of this afternoon were not a part of some bad dream. Certainly such an erotic atmosphere could not be considered smart. This complete freedom from restraint could not be a recognized social usage. The suspicion that Fennell had presumed upon her reputation as a showgirl to lower the bars of decorum troubled her, until she heard him repeat his vile story to other women. From the general laughter, she judged that her own ideas would be thought puritanical. She became interested in watching Miss Courtenay, the girl in the riding habit, one of the season's debutantes, who it seemed was especially susceptible to the influence of liquor. "If you shake a bar towel at Elizabeth, she goes under the table," Bert Hayman explained. "We love to get her full." It excited great merriment when sometime later Miss Courtenay had to be sent home in an automobile, leaving her saddle horse to be led by her escort. Lorelei was glad when it came time to dress for dinner. As she went to her room, Mrs. Fennell stopped her on the stairs to say, "My dear, you're stunning in that little black and white. Where did you get it?" Lorelei gave her the name of her tailor. "Really? I never heard of her." Mrs. Fennell smiled and laid a soft hand upon her guest's arm. "Elizabeth Courtenay was frantically jealous of you."
"Of me? I don't understand."
"She and Bert are great friends, and he's gone perfectly daft over you. Why, he's telling everybody." Lorelei flushed, to the evident amusement of her hostess, who ran on, "Oh, Bert means it. I never heard him rave so. Quite a compliment, my dear. He declares he's going to win you. So make up your mind to it. He never takes no for an answer." With a playful pat, she went on her way, leaving the young wife weak with dismay. When Bob came in, he betrayed an elation only too familiar.
"You've been drinking," cried Lorelei.
"I had to. I ran 15 three times. My abstinence is the marvel of the whole party. Why, Clayton has composed a song about it."
"I'm afraid."
"Say, you can't help sneezing when you have a cold. What's a fellow going to do in a crowd like this? Don't worry, I know when to quit.
In truth, he did seem better able to take care of himself than most of the men Lorelei had seen, so she said no more. As he throttled himself with his evening tie, Bob gasped, "Having a good time?"
"Yes."
Lorelei could not summon courage for a negative answer. She could not confess that her dream had turned out wretchedly, and that what Bob seemed to consider simply the usual thing impressed her as abnormal and wanton.
"Well, that's good," he said. "I'm not strong for these weekend slaughters, but it's something you'll have to do."
"Is all society like this?" she inquired.
"Yes and no. Society is like a layer cake."
"Because it's made of dough?"
Bob laughed. "Partly. Anyhow, the upper crust is icy, while the lower layer is just as rich as those above. It's more indigestible. There's the heavy, soggy layers in between, too. I don't know any of that crowd. They're mostly dodos, the kind that endow colleges. This younger set keeps the whole cake from getting tasteless."
After a while, Lorelei ventured, "I'm still a little nervous. I wish you'd stay close to me this evening."
"Can't be done," Bob declared. "It's a rule at Fennel Court that husbands must ignore their wives. Betty doesn't invite many married couples, and a wife lover is considered a pest. When in Rome, do as the tourists do."
Lorelei finished dressing in silence. Dinner was quite different to anything Bob's wife had ever experienced. And if the afternoon had been embarrassing to her, the evening was a trial. As the cocktails were served, Hardin Fennel distinguished himself by losing his balance and falling backward, to the great amusement of the guests. No one went to his assistance. He regained his feet by climbing a high-backed chair, hand over hand, and during the dinner, he sat for the most part in a comatose state, his eyes bleared and staring, his tongue unresponsive. Lorelei had little opportunity of watching him, since Bert Heyman monopolized her attention. The latter made love openly, violently now, and it added to her general disgust to see that Bob had again fallen into the clutches of Miss Wyeth, who made no secret of her fondness for him. Lorelei was not the only one to take special note of the blonde girl's infatuation. Mrs. Thompson Blair was equally observant and at length made her disapproval patent by a remark that set the table laughing and drove the blood from Lorelei's face. As if further to vent her resentment at Bob, the widow turned spitefully upon his wife. Seeing Lorelei wince, Heyman murmured consolingly,
"Oh, don't mind the old heifer. She's jealous of any man Alice speaks to."
But Mrs. Thompson Blair seemed to take a quenchless delight in embarrassing her victim, and sometime later Lorelei heard her explain to the man on her right,
"We weren't surprised in the least. Bob's always doing some crazy thing when he's drunk. His latest fancy, a pretty of course, but from some western village, I believe. Can't possibly last. Why should it?"
The words were purposely made audible, and during the rest of the meal, when Mrs. Thompson Blair was not bitingly sarcastic to Lorelei, she was offensively patronizing. Bert Heyman, it transpires, was not only an authority on musical comedies and pony ballets, but he was equally well posted on dogs, and a debutante across the table appealed to him for advice in breeding an Airedale bitch she had purchased at the last show. The discussion that followed was sufficiently frank to embarrass the aristocratic Airedale herself had she been present, but it did not appear to shock the diners. Mrs. Madden, a neighbor who was a leader in the polo set, dropped in for coffee and a cigarette. Lorelei was surprised to see her, clad in a well-fitting man's dinner suit.
Miss Madden's hair was tightly drawn back. With a neat part on the left side, she smoked an extra-large cigarette from a man's jeweled case. Her voice was coarse, her mannerisms distinctly masculine. Nor was this eccentricity a passing whim. She masqueraded thus, so Haman affirmed, whenever she dared, and had once attempted to attend a horse show in trousers. After dinner, Lorelei had a better opportunity than during the afternoon of becoming acquainted with the women of the party, but the experience was not pleasant. Mrs. Thompson Bellair had struck a popular note by patronizing her, and the other women followed suit. Lorelei amused and interested them in a casual way, but she was made to understand that they regarded her not as Bob's wife in any real sense, but rather as his latest and most fleeting fancy. His marriage they seemed to look upon as a bizarre adventure, such as might happen to any man in their set who was looking for amusement. There was more dancing during the evening. Miss Wyeth continued to monopolize Bob, and Lorelei was offended to note that his resistance gave signs of weakening. She smothered her feelings, however, and remonstrated gently, only to find that he was in no condition to listen. The dinner had been too much for him. There were many gaieties to enliven the party, and although outward decencies were observed after a fashion, Lorelei was sickened by the sheer license that she felt on every hand. Unable to endure the growing heat of Haman's advances, she slipped away at last and hid herself in another room, only to overhear a quarrel between Alice Wyeth and Mrs. Thompson Bellair, the fierceness of which was only equaled by its absurdity. Lorelei stole out of the room again with ears burning. Her dislike of the muscular widow had turned to loathing, and she was glad to return to the lights and laughter. She had a wild desire to make her excuses and escape from Fennel Court, but Bob had disappeared, and she gathered that he and Bert were playing off some fabulous wager in the billiard room. Pleading a headache, she excused herself as soon as she could. "So sorry," said Mrs. Fennel then with a knowing laugh. "There's no likelihood of Bob's annoying you for some time. Bertie will see to that."
Join me next time for another romantic chapter of The Auction Block by Rex Beach, here on Love's Tender Flame.